Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm privileged to welcome a very, very senior and accomplished large public sector company chairman and author. And all of you know that I am very partial to authors, Mr. Partho S. Bhattacharya. Partho, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Ashutosh. Thanks for that very generous introduction.
Thank you. Partho was the former chairman of Coal India Limited. He's the author of a best-selling book, When Coal Turned Gold. He has been featured as one of the transformation leaders of corporate India. He's been recognized, felicitated, and awarded several times. He sits on the boards of several companies, including one listed in the Toronto Stock Exchange. So Partho, you've had such a fascinating journey. You know, you started from a management trainee in 1977 with Coal India to the chairman. Tell me some of the key milestones in your journey.
Thanks for that question. You see, I joined Coal India just within 1.5 years after it was formed. It was formed in November 1975. So basically, I can say I've evolved with the company. The company has evolved and so have I. So let me quickly take you through the journey of Coal India to make the whole thing properly understood. Mm-hmm. See, India faced a major oil crisis in early 70s.
Correct.
And it was not in the current shape where it has $600 billion of forex reserves and all that. That was very meager at that time. So the shock was severe. What it did was it took a deep dive into examining the energy options that it had, that it has to, you know, to meet the growth requirements. And it quickly identified on coal. It felt that coal is the only source of energy which is abundantly available. And, basically coal is what can be depended upon in this country. Then it observed that coal was largely in the private sector. There was a small public sector company also, but mostly in the private sector. And the growth was less than 2% per annum. Now, that kind of a growth cannot meet the energy requirement for future, for a GDP growth of even 5%. When they looked into it more deeply, they found that the price was the major bottleneck. Mm-hmm. Coal price, which was controlled, was very low, and it was not remunerative enough for private investments to come. Unfortunately, it also realized that coal is at that time was a kitchen fuel. It is domestic fuel in the kitchens. Mm. So any serious price increase can land the party in power into a problem in the next elections. Mm. Therefore, it wanted to do something, how to pump in money for investments, at the same time not raise prices. Mm. And the only solution was nationalization. Mm-hmm. So coal was nationalized.
Wow.
After a bit of restructuring, Coal India was formed in 1975. As a holding company of 5 subsidiaries. That's how the journey started. And the mandate was very clear. The mandate was to reverse the growth rate from sub 2% to plus 5%. Now, that was done by pumping in investments from the government funds through the budgetary support route, mm-hmm. with equity and loan in 50-50 ratio, roughly. So the loan definitely attracted a debt servicing requirement, but the equity servicing was not expected by the government, because they know that. And prices were not really revised. Mm. So what happened in the next 16 years that went on like that, Coal India actually achieved the mandate. The growth rate was turned to 5.3% over the entire period from 75 to 91. But at the same time, it accumulated huge losses. It eroded 40% of the equity, and also a large overdue arrears of debt service payments to government. I mean, government was not very careful about extracting debt service payments because it wanted the money to be retained for other purposes. And Coal India was also not in a position to pay. So that's how it happened.
Okay.
In the 90s, when the economic reforms took place, the government quickly took a decision to have arm's length distance with the PSUs and phase out budgetary support. Mm-hmm. That is when the company got into a serious problem, because it had a very poor balance sheet. That balance sheet was not good enough to source commercial funds. At the same time, the budgetary support was phased out. The only thing that was done was the price was a little bit rationalized. Mm. That is a time when the company did absolutely first-rate reforms. I mean, that reforms can be compared with some of the best that the country has adopted or other PSUs have adopted. And as a result, the company started earning profits from 92 onwards. the profits became grew a little over a period of time. It unfailingly met debt service requirements. It got the balance sheet restructured with government support. The overdue arrears were taken care of through a cabinet approved restructuring process. It approached the World Bank for a $1 billion sectoral loan to cover 24 good projects and secured that in 1998. And then the turnaround of Coal India as a whole started.
Wow.
So my role in all this was, first 10 years, I was outside the corporate office, a very junior officer, so I could only see it from a distance. Mm-hmm. It was just sort of a hearsay kind of thing. Right. In 87, I was posted in Coal India headquarters, fortunately in a very good position, which is technical secretary to the finance director. Okay. Which is the equivalent of executive assistant, you can say.
Yes.
So that gave me a glimpse of the internal workings. And then I joined the whole transformation journey by doing all kinds of analysis. In fact, the personal contribution that I made, sort of a solo and personal, which makes me feel very happy, is developing a financial model, which was Excel-based. It was done only by me.
Wow.
It was known only to the chairman and some people in the government, some people in the World Bank. That's all. So this model was prepared over a period of 1.5 years. And it had extensive what-if features with also a facility of being linked to a risk software. I mean, it could be simulated 100,000 times or whatever it is. This model was tested for inherent consistency, both in the Planning Commission, because they had to process the capital restructuring proposal, and also in the World Bank headquarters at Washington. And both of them cleared the use of this model for preparing the proposals.
Amazing.
So as a result, you see, all models, no model is perfect, but some are very useful. This is possibly one of those which helped Coal India to get the capital restructuring done, as well as the World Bank loan approved.
Incredible.
So these are some of the milestones in my journey till that point in time. The next phase was my joining Bharat Coking Coal Limited as the CMD. And normally, the finance people are not posted in that position, but somehow I got it. It was a hugely loss-making company.
Right.
And turning that around over a period of 2.5 years, we'll talk about it later.
Yeah.
That was the other milestone that catapulted me to the top, the hot spot in Coal India, chairman's position.
And which year did you take over as a chairman of Coal India?
That was 2006.
Wonderful. Wonderful. So, you know, you also piloted Coal India from what you would call a mini Ratna to a Navratna to a Maharatna in 4 years. I mean, that's quite an amazing journey. What were some of your challenges and some of your learnings?
Yeah, I must thank you for this question. This is a good question I would love to answer. In fact, this journey is possibly the shortest in the history of PSUs.
Correct.
And something that makes one feel good. You see, when I joined Coal India, it was a profitable company at that time. It was already earning profits, but it was not a mini Ratna company. Now, getting mini Ratna was a fairly low-hanging fruit. Mm. All that it required was to satisfy the Department of Public Enterprises that we are eligible under a sort of a template.
Mm-hmm.
And then once that is done, the DPE will recommend it to the ministry, administrative ministry, which is Ministry of Coal in this case, and they will grant the mini Ratna. So we did all that in first 6 months. So by March 2007, we were all mini Ratna, not only Coal India, but also four of its subsidiaries, profit being subsidiaries. But that was not enough because, you know, all the biggies, which are even smaller than Coal India, were already Navaratnas. And without being a Navaratna, it was really not very. That we pitched in a very strong manner.
Mm-hmm.
What we said was in a bullet format, 5 things.
Mm-hmm.
First thing we said that Coal India is a company that meets 40% of commercial energy of this country, which is bigger than the aggregate of all the oil and gas companies taken together. And all those companies were never up at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Second, this is done without dependence on any kind of subsidization from the government. There's no subsidy from the government. Third, the price of coal after adjusting for energy differential is at a deep discount to the international prices. That's the next. The fourth, even after doing all this, the company manages to have a margin of 25 to 30% and pays to the government dividends and taxes, which in most of the years is more than the entire 100% of equity contribution of the government to the company. So which other company has a better strategic relevance? Why should this company not be a Navratna? But we got into a jam immediately because every Navratna company is listed and we were not. So the government said that you go and get yourself listed first. So that was a setback. But fortunately, you know, fortune favors the brave, if I may say so. The demand supply gap in the country for coal started accelerating exponentially at that time because the power sector was accelerating its pace of capacity addition 3 times more than the earlier periods. And therefore, the domestic coal supply fell short. Imports were rising exponentially. Mm-hmm. So what was required was to approve coal projects faster. Now, in a Navaratna company, the authority of the board is much bigger than mm-hmm. a Miniratna company. So approvals can happen within the board. Mm-hmm. If that doesn't happen, it goes to the government, it takes 2 more years' time. Mm-hmm. So we made that argument. And ultimately, a very special case, we got the Navaratna with the condition that we should get ourselves listed in 3 years' time.
Okay.
So that's how we got the Navaratna. Mm. Now, then it comes to listing. When we went for initial dipstick studies to US and UK, we found that the outcome was quite scary and people didn't view Coal India properly. We had all kinds of, misreportation. We are not known for the right reasons, I can say that. But we took those issues very seriously. Mm. And we created a rebuttal for that, not only based on words, but also based on facts and actions on the ground. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, a very small example is environment. There was a point that, you are the largest landowner in the country and you completely spoil the land without restoring reclamation. Mm-hmm. What we did was we quickly signed up with the NRSA, National Remote Sensing Agency, took them to take pictures annually of all the large open cast projects and see for ourselves whether the commensurate land restoration reclamation is happening or not.
Wow.
And the project officers of the respective projects were informed about that. Mm-hmm. The moment that happened, after 1 year, we found that all of these projects were compliant. Mm-hmm. We pushed them to get ISO 14001. They all got that. It was a very strong story that we could write in the red herring prospectus.
Yes.
So this is how we tackled the issues. And ultimately, history was created when the IPO was launched.
And your IPO was, when I was reading about you, in the top 3 in the world and still is the largest in India. How large was the IPO?
Yeah, it was a $3.5 billion IPO, 10% of Coal India, Coal India's equity. But once it was marketed, what it did was it raised subscription of $54 billion. That was about 15.3 times.
Mm.
The institutional segment was oversubscribed by 25 times.
Amazing.
And all the large funds of the world had actually jumped in. This happened because of a very strong story, told with passion and conviction, I would say that, which led to this kind of an outcome. And one point I must say that the price at which the IPO was sold was not low. It was, in fact, benchmarked to the best performing coal stock globally.
Okay.
The EV-EBITDA ratio of that particular stock, less 10% left for listing gains was the basis of price fixation. So even at that price, this kind of oversubscription took place. And all the more satisfying is on the day of listing, it further increased by 40%. On the issue price. So that was a very satisfying kind of an issue. And it was the largest that the India has seen so far. Of course, that position may we may lose that position once the LIC IPO comes up next
year. But, it'll always be Coal India will always be the first company that was the largest. After that, it'll always be the second or third. No,
there was Reliance Power was the largest before us.
Okay.
So then we became largest.
Okay.
We continued in the journey for about 11 years. So whatever.
Okay. And then after this IPO, you got your Maharatna.
Yeah, Maharatna was a natural corollary of the IPO.
Okay.
So all the 3 Ratnas we got in that period of 4.5 years.
Fascinating. So Partha, you were also talking about, your experiences on turning around BCCL. Tell me about this journey.
Oh, that was really, it changed everything in me, excepting maybe the DNA. Other than that, everything, I became a different person after the whole turnaround took place. You see, I was selected for turning around this company. This company has been a perennial loss maker right from 1970s. From its formation.
BCCL is Bharat Coking Coal.
Bharat Coking Coal. And it is based out of Dhanbad, Chadia, not one of the best places in the country.
Correct.
The country is known for mafia, as you know.
Yeah.
So it had all kinds of, or every possible difficulty in mining that one can conceive of is there in that company. It had a long history of mine fires, more than 100 years. And as a result, every coal mine there had one or more seams under fire. So that's a massive safety hazard.
Yeah.
We have to handle that part. Then the manpower was about 20% of Coal India's, whereas the share of production was just about 5%.
Okay.
You know, 100,000 people and hardly 22 million tons of production. Mm. So that was the kind of situation. The other bigger problem was the coal was sold. I mean, a part was sold to the core sector companies, but the mm-hmm. non-core sector companies, mm-hmm. that was given about 25% of the coal at mm-hmm. notified price, which was known to go into the gray market. Mm-hmm. So they made all the money and the company lost on it. This was the other problem. So with all those kind of problems, the company was into a cash loss. When I joined, the company was incurring losses of the order of 60 million rupees, mm-hmm. 600 crores mm-hmm. Annually. And out of that, 50% was cash loss. So as a result, huge accumulated liabilities were there. Liabilities to even the Provident Fund authorities. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, the top management was not behind bars because the PF was under the Ministry of Coal.
Okay.
It was Coal Mines Provident Fund.
Mm-hmm.
Had it been any other PF, we had all been in jail. No turnaround.
Okay.
So that was the situation. There was a huge payment lag with vendors. Mm-hmm. The vendors used to supply today and come after 22 months to receive their payments, mm-hmm. that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
There were payment defaults to the CISF. We were mm-hmm. having a 3,000 contingent CISF
mm-hmm.
to guard the mines and the installations. So CISF was threatening to take back mm-hmm. their contingent, and we had to handle that. So it was all kinds of problems, huge cash problems. What we did was we took the problem one by one. And I would just explain to you one of them where you will see the issue. You see, the only net salary payment up to these 100,000 workers, that was paid sometime during the month.
Mm.
Normally, the payment due on 1st used to happen from 25th to 28th. So with a delay, but it was paid during the month. Rest, everything was, you know, sort of, you can say, left to God,
mm-hmm.
that kind of stuff. Now, this I challenged. I said that this cannot go on. You have to make payments to suppliers of production, of holding, or safety items. They must get paid. Otherwise, you will not get your supply. Your production will stop.
Right.
And I explained to the unions that another drop by 1 million. Production was dropping like a stone. You know, from 28, it had come down to 23.
Mm-hmm.
So I showed them that one more million ton drop means 70 crores of rupees or 700 million rupees goes out of the system. And in that situation, you will not be able to pay the net salary during the course of the month.
Mm-hmm.
And in that situation, we will not be facing each other across the table. Rather, we will all be on one side of the table. On the mm-hmm. other side will be 100,000 workers,
right,
questioning both of us.
Mm-hmm.
And since I have come new, I will tell them to ask you,
mm-hmm.
how do you explain why this has happened?
Correct.
So then they actually understood the whole situation. We changed the priorities. That was one. Then we insisted that the equipment have to be replaced because the equipment had not replaced. No investments were happening. So that was another problem we handled. The third point, the question of, you know, coal being sold to non-core sector at the lower prices, we had to stop that. We introduced electronic auction of coal. So that was the third point. Then we felt that in between coal mines, there were places where coal deposits were there, which was amenable to pilferage, you know, illegal mining and pilferage. So we said that all that coal is ours. So we employed contractors to take out that coal. So these measures collectively led to turnaround of the company in 2006.
Quite fascinating. Quite fascinating. And then you moved back to Coal India.
Yeah, that led me to come to Coal India.
Wonderful. So, you know, I've often wondered, what is it like for the chairman of a large public sector to manage almost 300,000 employees? What are your thoughts on that?
You see, there are two aspects. One is that there is a hierarchical process.
Correct.
The Coal India is a holding company under which there are 8 subsidiaries.
Correct.
And 95% of the people are in those subsidiaries. Mm. We have officers and non-executives.
Mm.
The officers cater wherever they are posted, even if they are posted in the subsidiaries. It is centralized. It is all decided by Coal India. The pay scales, the promotion, transfers, postings, etc. is decided in Coal India. The non-executive cases, it is decided in the subsidiary companies. It is not comes to Coal India. But Coal India is responsible for pay scale revisions,
mm-hmm.
implementation, and all those things. And the chairman must be having a sort of a clear sense of the industrial relations situation in every company. That is expected of him. And also try to foster a relationship of harmony and industrial peace so that there is no mandates lost on account of strikes and things like that. That is the chairman's role. So I think it requires a little bit of empathy, compassion, and, you know, of course, you have to be firm and gentle, you can say that, and deal with the issues as it comes, based on logic, rationale, and clarity. I think if one does that, fortunately, Coal India has trade unions which are strong, but they are matured. They understand.
Very interesting. So, Partho, now let's move from Coal India Limited to coal. I mean, you know, coal has, as you said very rightly, been a very major driver of our economy and indeed many other economies in the world. So my first question to you is, what do you see as the future of coal as a source of energy in the years ahead?
See, coal has been a great source of energy as long as we didn't have renewables. Let's be honest. I mean, till 5 years back, we never spoke of anything else. It was all coal. That's because the renewable power tariff at that time, it was just started, was 16, 18 rupees per kilowatt. So that it was completely, uncompetitive sort of. But now when the renewable has become competitive and the situation is getting clear, I must say that coal has a limited life. Coal will not exist for all time to come. But at the same time, countries like ours, our dependence on coal is huge. I mean, even today, let us say something like more than 55% of the capacity and something like 71, 72% of the actual generation in billion units of electricity is coal-based.
Wow.
So that will not come down in a day. Well, we need to really encourage renewable because of the fact that, you know, climate change is definitely a matter of concern. And we have to do that. And as long as that does not happen, we have to try and make use of coal more sustainable, more climate friendly. So we are seriously, you know, talking about, or rather we should have talked even more seriously earlier also about coal washing, for example. You only permit use of beneficiated coal. Don't move the high ash coal for a longer distance and, you know, generate wastage of railway resources, whatever it is. So this is something. Then use the right kind of boilers, the ultra mega and all those things, where emissions are contained. So by doing all this, we should be able to continue use of coal for a longer period as long as it is required, because you have to make an optimum transformation. You cannot make the transformation at a cost to the public, because people need energy. So that should continue, and the transformation should also take place. I hope we are moving in broadly the right direction. I mean, the country has also adopted a policy of coal gasification, which is again to make use of coal more environment friendly. Once you gasify the coal, you are actually taking out the chemical value of coal. Coal is a storehouse of chemicals as well. We have not been able to look at that aspect because there was always a demand supply gap between coal required for the power stations and the coal available.
Correct.
So we had to, everything was going to power. So once we can do that, I think we should be able to use coal more in an environment friendly manner for a longer period of time and make the transition seamless and smooth. But the transition is sure to happen.
You just mentioned, you know, that almost 70% of our energy is coming from coal and it will continue. Do we have sufficient stocks?
Well, as far as reserves are concerned, we have no issues because we have more than 300 billion tons of coal.
There's
no issues.
Okay.
Yeah. The problem was in players. There was Coal India was the only player. Now the government has, you know, adopted commercial mining and blocks are being given to various agencies. So there are more players are being created. So with more players, reserves being abundant, I think coal sufficiency will not be an issue.
Okay. But do you see a reversal of roles taking place? You mentioned that the renewable sources of power were very expensive and coal was cheap. But now renewable sources of power is coming down so significantly. People are saying renewable power could be almost zero. Will that have a negative impact on coal?
Well, you see, it cannot be zero because, you know, there's a huge capex in setting up renewable. And capex also, you have to find money for that capex.
Yeah.
So capex costs will be there. And there is renewable cost is low because there is a lot of, direct and indirect subsidization. There's a capex subsidy. There is also, as for the policy, it's a must avail kind of thing, the must offtake. Whereas coal-based power is mid-order system. You know, so there are some differences there. So once everything is at level playing field, I think coal will also compete for some more time.
Okay, fair enough.
Eventually, you know, we can have hydrogen, we can have more efficient fuels. and the whole thing is likely to change. There is no doubt. But it may take some time. We have to also remember that every ton of coal funds it was earlier clean energy. Now, of course, it has become a GST compensation. But basically, 400 rupees a ton, which is about 25,000-30,000 crores or other 250 billion rupees a year, goes to finance the good things.
Amazing. Amazing. So
that is also coal's contribution.
Amazing. So I've got one more question about you as the CEO or chairman of Coal India before I move to your book. I've often wondered and marveled, a person as the chairman of an organization of the size of Coal India must have some very unique capabilities as compared to a public-private sector chairman, because you have the government at the center, government at the state, the political leaders, the bureaucracy, you're also providing employment, you are responsible for the townships that are being created everywhere. What do you see as the important qualities of a public sector chairman of a Maharatna?
Well, I think the first thing is, you should not allow the chair to get into your head.
Okay.
There are two kinds of chairmen. One is those who are really chair. And they're the Rajas and Maharajas kind of thing. And the other group who actually does that job. He has been assigned a job, he does that job.
Correct.
Always try to be in the second category. I mean, the moment you are 60, the plug will be taken off.
Correct.
And it's all done. So one has to appreciate and understand the reality from that point of view. You know, it requires a little bit of humility, that's all. Second most important thing is, you must enjoy the job that you do. Without enjoying, you can't do a job. Enjoyment would require that you have a passion, you have a conviction in whatever you are doing. So if these two things are there, there is a component of integrity. I mean, integrity in a very holistic sense, intellectual, emotional, of course, financial, and all these things. If all these things are there, then I think you will have an automatic position of respect and regard in the organization where people will follow you.
Okay.
And also the ecosystem around you will try to listen to you. You will have a better, you know, response from the ecosystem. So these qualities are required to be imbibed. And the most important other quality that you require is to be flexible enough to give up one of your great ideas in favor of a superior idea from a subordinate.
Okay, well said.
That is not easy, but yes, you have to cultivate that habit.
Very interesting. So I'm now going to move to your book, When Coal Turned Gold. And I saw a picture of you with President Pranab Mukherjee. Maybe he released the book. But tell me about your book and what made you write it.
See, I never really thought of writing any book till I joined BCCL. Up to 2003, I was doing a job that hardly creates a situation where a book can be. BCCL, as I said, changed me into a different person, except that I think I could retain my DNA, that's all. So that is when I started thinking about the book. And after the journey in Coal India, I felt that, you see, at least for one reason, I should be leaving a book as a document. Now, everybody knows that the IPO is resounding success, great thing, etc. But coming from a perceived to be laid back Eastern India company, how could this happen?
Correct.
You know, how could this happen is not known to anybody, known to a very few people, maybe some people in the ministry and in Coal India, that's all. That was a story worth being told. So that is when I thought that the book should be written. And the reason why I approached Mr. Pranab Mukherjee for writing the foreword, he actually wrote the foreword.
Okay.
And since he wrote the foreword, he refused to launch the book.
Okay.
So I got it launched by the Central Vigilance Commissioner, Mr. Okay. Pratyush Sinha. He released the book. The reason why Mr. Pranab Mukherjee was happy to write the foreword was he saw very closely the IPO process. In fact, you see, there were a couple of hiccups.
He was the finance minister at that time.
He was the finance minister
at that time. Yes.
And there were a couple of hiccups. And I must say that his greatness was revealed in more than once in solving this. And if you have a little time, I can just mention one or two things.
Sure.
Like, for example, first thing that happened was the trade unions were up in arms. I mean, they conceived this as a privatization. So they said a 3-day strike followed by an indefinite strike. They called the strike. Now, I always had a feeling about the trade unions, that trade unions are strong but mature. So you need to engage with them. You cannot, say, go to hell. You cannot, they will really take you to hell.
Sure.
So what we did was, in quick succession, we arranged some meetings with them, and the last meeting was with the finance minister. Mm. He agreed to meet them. It is very rare for the finance minister to meet trade unions of a PSU. But he met. And once he met them, the job was done. They all got convinced that this is not a private issue. So they strike through. Second thing, the problem happened with the MOEF. The MOEF, in its zeal to protect forests, they suddenly made a statement that 35% of coal-bearing reserves are under forest and mining should be banned there. Immediately, my bankers came. At that time, IPO was in the full swing. So the bankers came back and said, "Sir, you are losing valuation to the extent of 50,000-60,000 crores. So we had no way but to immediately rush back to the finance minister, say that this is what is going to happen and the country is going to lose because the money is all going to the country's coffers." So he immediately had a discussion with the minister for MOEF and got it sorted out.
Okay.
The third interesting problem was the cabinet approval was not happening.
Oh.
Everything was happening, but not the cabinet approval. So when that problem came up, one day in exasperation, I just had a telephone talk. He said, "You see, it will take 3 weeks. Don't worry. But I don't want your schedule to be upset. So tell me what I can do for you." So then I told him, "Sir, if you can authorize selection of bankers process to start, because normally that starts only after the cabinet approval. If it could start, but the order only after the approval comes, then we save 3 weeks." He did that.
Okay. Very interesting. Very interesting. So, Partho, I have time for only one more question for you. I was debating what to ask you, but this is for the thousands of people who will listen to all that you have said. What would your advice be to a young manager who's listening to the former chairman of one of India's biggest public sector undertakings and starting off on her or his journey in the corporate world?
Well, you see, this generation is very different from our generation.
Correct.
I must say that. And we believed in only doing jobs. This generation believes in entrepreneurship.
Correct.
So it is quite different. But I would say something basic always remains. So my first advice would be that the basic direction of the journey, please allow your core competence, find out what your core competence is, and passions. So let core competence and passion decide your journey.
Correct.
Do whatever you love and feel proud of that. This is absolutely common for anything that somebody is doing.
Absolutely.
The other thing I would like to say is that please always bear in mind that the devil lies in the details.
Correct.
Anything that you want to do, you have to go granular. You have to understand to the last point. Otherwise, you may meet with a problem somewhere.
Fabulous. So,
I think that is the broad.
Very well said. Very well said. Partho, thank you so much. It's been such an honor to speak to you. I mean, I've always looked up to Coal India as one of our biggest public sector undertakings, but it is such a pleasure to actually learn and talk to the person who led it into this direction. Thank you again. And
thank you, Ashutosh. Thank you so much. It was good to talk to you.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.